there's ups and downs, and it can also be the site of pain, like I said. You had said previously a number of times that you became prisoners on your own land, and I'm just curious as to how you translated that feeling of the land being your car cell to then also being the thing that you were in love with, like you said yesterday. And I'm just curious how that process is and what that dynamic internally is like.
There's two different lands that I speak about. Sorry, I should be clear about that. The reserve lands where my people all live in right now, like the reserve lands that my mother's people live on right now, is called Big River First Nation. And that's where I feel imprisoned. I'm born into a system that imprisons my people. And if you go there, there's a lot of poverty, a lot of suicide, a lot of death. And this is where I feel the most grief. But there's another land that I talk about where you're hearing the love and just the sense of freedom and incredible joy that I feel when I go out there. And those are the hunting lands. The hunting lands of my people, my father's people, where my people are also buried, that I'm defending right now from the law. That's where I feel the most intense joy and just that freedom to explore. And that cabin that I had an image of yesterday, I went and found that cabin. And when I went in there, it seemed like the relative that had lived there had just walked out the day before and was going to come back. That's how everything was left. All the trapping materials still there and everything. And I would keep going back there, you know, fall asleep sometimes there, you know, dream. But that's where I feel most joy is being out there. In fact, I invite any one of you to come out there to see my people's lands and come taste the water that it's unheard of that you can still drink from the land, the water, and that's what I'm trying to protect. It's not just a silly invitation, I mean it. Come contact me and next spring or summer, I will take you to my people's lands before they thoroughly devastate it and destroy it, so that you have an opportunity to see it, to see what it is that I love so much. Does that answer your question?
I'm just wondering if, in relation to your question, the other panelists wanted to talk about this sense of suffering from the land that you spoke of, Dakota, and this might have something to share on the theme.
I definitely sense a sense of suffering as well. Thought on my own, but I talked about two different lands I spoke before. But you've all seen them driving down the highways. Every once in a while, if you drive along, and, you know, I find that you'll just get this intense, you know, just sadness, you know, looking out across it. And it's just devastating to think of what was there before. And there's a lot of hurt and pain in the land. But I don't feel it at all on our land. And it's nice to have that contrast, but just come up with some time and spend some time on the land that is.
My question was, like, in addition to the migratory thing.
you can feel it.
What's the land ethic for urban places?
Dakota reminded me of a conversation my husband and I had around and observing and seeing the land and how we're also seeing it from really different eyes. More me than him, I think, because he's been here longer. But not just a sense of suffering, but even just energetically. Most people will comment and look at camellias in full bloom. How beautiful that is. Look at that bright yellow against the blue skies. Mm-hmm. But I actually started to pay attention to how my pulse would react and my thoughts and just my energy and how I would react. And actually that intense yellow is a very high level of energy. And it's you know, so telling of our time in a way where we're constantly checking our phones and we're trying to multitask and we're, you know, here but in our minds we're there. And that's the same feeling that I get when I look across now a whole field of just yellow, right? Versus when I start to look and be sometimes not even native bird, but that which is being restored is bringing back those varied colors of the greens and the purples and some yellow in there. And how different even just my bodily reaction is to that in the sense of calm and the sense of peace and the ability to think in a different way. And so not just from a, you know, a sense of suffering of what's been done to the land, but also what that landscape is doing back to us and our own mental and physical health. As in something I've been really contemplating on since seeing this summer, this set of seasons go through. It's kind of been my big meditation 2015, I guess.
I guess something that probably a lot of you don't know about our farm is that before we brought it back to good health, I knew the dark side of stewardship. In other words, our riparian areas were probably scoring about 37% instead of 84%. A lot of the trees had disappeared. A lot of the wetlands were worked up and seeded to grain so we could have more, grow more grain, have more beef, and continue on the treadmill. And just hearing Dakota talk about peace on his farm, now that we've taken the farm back and restored it, I am like Dakota. If I'm away from the farm for any length of time, I find that I need to get back for a retreat, to go and walk in the prairie, to listen to the meadowlarks, to maybe stumble across a sprag's pipit nest. That is affirmation that we've basically made atonement for our sins. And to be forgiven by the land is very, very overpowering. So, yeah, there's a lot that needs to be prepared.
I had a question for Sylvia. Talk about your healing waters, that you would collect water from the streams. The question I had is that you would share it with the little people. What do you mean by the little people? I have a sense it's a part of the land. It's a spiritual, my people believe we're interconnected with the spiritual world. So when I talk about the little people, it's the little people. Spiritual little people, not the human little people. I'll clarify that. It's the spiritual little people that only very few people are ever gifted to see them. They only reveal themselves through those that are profoundly connected to the lands and the waters. I've never seen them. My mother has. She has seen them. Those are the little people that I'm referring to. So my question is to the whole panel. At our table, we talked about some very restrictive things for anyone who's trying to manage land in an ethical way, in terms of existing regulations and the
example that was brought up was with butchery, that it's often completely prohibitive for small operations to follow the large, the rules set up for large organizations. And the reason I question this for the whole panel is that it occurred to me that from the indigenous perspective, there is a long history of being able to, or needing to articulate the responsibility to the land and not recognizing the supposed authority that is imposed upon for land management. And that it's kind of a mutual struggle in that way, regardless of if you're settler or indigenous, to oppose those restrictions that are counter to being ethical with the land. And I just wanted to know your thoughts on the potential for being strength together by sharing the language that can be used and maybe the attitudes and approaches that can be taken, tools, tactics, things like that, that might be able to sort of help everybody.
During the discussion, we were actually talking about the same thing, about how it's getting increasingly harder to be a small farmer these days, and it's not so much that land prices are so high, it's that the rules and regulations that are in place now are so prohibitive, so inefficient, that it's just too hard. Dawn spoke about several abattoirs near him that are closing down just because of the amount of paperwork and logistics that they have to go through just to do their jobs. They have to appease the government or the legislation to appease them. And I don't know, to be certified organic, if there's an incredible amount of paperwork and work involved, just tracking where things come to and where things go. Like they assume that people are going to cheat, going to lie, and they have all these rules in place. And it's just so hard. And I feel it, especially that I really, really want to farm and I want to grow good food for people. But at the same time, I don't want to have to market it because I'm just afraid of the logistical nightmare of how you have to get everything inspected by people who have no idea what organic means. And it's scary, but my hope is that if you can get a community together and we agree that we're going to work towards a common goal of working with the land to heal it, and if everybody gets involved with local farmers, not mention anyone's welcome to come on to his farm. I'd be glad to show people around some of our lands as well and get them involved so that when these corporations come in and put this legislation down that says, you have to jump through these hoops if you want to sell food to these people, the community can step in and say, no, we don't care about those hoops. We know that person. He's a good man. He wants to sell good food to these people, and it's not necessary. And if they say, well, no, it's the law, if 1,000 people come in, if 2,000, 30,000 people come in and say, no, we don't care about the law. We just want good food, and we are going to be the ones that take responsibility for our hands. We're going to eat and just stay out of it.